Thank you for listening to the Resources for Integrated Care podcast series, addressing menopause and health across the life course for dually eligible women with disability. This podcast is excerpted from a webinar presented live on October 16th, 2023. In this podcast, Nikki Rosales, a consultant at the Lewin Group, facilitates a panel discussion with Dr. Beth Marks, Research Associate Professor in the Department of Disability and Human Development at the University of Illinois Chicago and former president of the National Organization of Nurses with Disabilities, Dr. John Harris, director of the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, UPMC's McGee Women's Hospital Center for Women with Disabilities, and assistant professor for the McGee Women's Research Institute, Claire Abonante, director of the Primary Care and Women's Health Access Program at Independence Care System, and Evelyn Castillo, an Independence Care System member, disability activist, facilitator, and crisis responder. During this discussion, panelists discuss barriers to accessing healthcare for women with disabilities and approaches that support health promotion for women with disability during and after the menopausal transition.
Our first question in the panel discussion is for Evelyn and Claire. How would you recommend providers and health plans better support women with disability? And Evelyn, I'm wondering if you could please start us off.
Sure. Make sure the facility is accessible for people with disabilities, having the proper equipment in place to be able to conduct proper examinations. For example, examination tables to adjust for safer transfer from the wheelchair to the examination table. Also ask patients if they need any accommodations when they're scheduling an appointment. Provide an accurate description of your facility's accessibility online. Don't indicate that the facility is accessible if you don't have accessible exam rooms, waiting tables, bathrooms, etc. And also ensure staff have sensitivity training when they're dealing with a person with a disability. Emphasize the need for empathy and the ability to imagine oneself in the shoes of a person with a disability. Example of a lived experience is when I went for an MRI. The technician was very accommodating. He allowed my personal aide to accompany and help me onto the table, and to also accommodate my claustrophobia, he gently covered my ears and eyes during the procedure.
Thank you, Evelyn, so much for sharing your experience and insights. Claire, would you mind sharing your thoughts and recommendations for providers and health plans next?
Sure. Thank you, Nikki. In addition to providers making their exam rooms barrier-free, both health plans and providers can support women with disabilities by being more proactive around their genitourinary care. Women with disabilities have a higher incidence of UTIs and skin breakdowns to begin with, and vaginal changes that come with menopause, and those UTI risks are increased. Providing access to enough incontinence supplies or catheters would be a great support for women with disabilities. In addition, easy access to UTI testing. What we've seen at ICS is the majority of our members receive their health care at clinics and do not have access to same-day appointments, or they can't come in a clinic for a walk-in or experience very long wait times. There's no on-site lab. Finally, they avoid standalone urgent care centers because many urgent care centers don't accept Medicaid. All of this means that women with disabilities end up going to the ER with UTI symptoms, just so they can be tested on site and get a prescription, which is increases ER utilization.
Excellent. Thank you both so much for your responses. Our next question is for Evelyn, Dr. Marks, and Claire. What's an example of an attitudinal barrier that limits access to healthcare for women with disability, and how can this barrier be overcome? Claire, will you please start us off?
Sure. Thank you, Nikki. An example of an attitudinal barrier is not seeing women with disabilities as sexual beings. As we heard today, menopause comes with sexual health changes, and many of those changes can be addressed, like topical vulvovaginal estrogen for painful sex, but many providers tend to overlook options for sexual satisfaction when they're talking to women with disabilities.
Thank you, Claire. Evelyn, would you mind sharing your thoughts next?
Sure. Well, living with a disability, I experienced a lot of impatience from medical staff. I think people don't understand that anyone can become disabled. They may not be disabled now, but there's no difference between them and me. I think if people understood this, they would be more sensitive and empathetic. Knowing I may experience this attitude of impatience or insensitivity makes the process of going to the doctor even less appealing. So I can see how it would discourage some women with disability from seeking care. I don't know if this is an attitudinal barrier behind this, but after my hysterectomy, I was not offered hormone replacement therapy. I was really struggling with the symptoms of immediate onset menopause, and I wish I had been allowed to consider that option.
Evelyn, thank you so very much for sharing your lived experience. Dr. Marks, I'll turn it over to you for your response to this question.
Okay. So women with disabilities face multiple access barriers for healthcare related to attitudinal issues. And some of these attitudinal issues include erroneous assumptions, negative attitude, being ignored or judged, violence, abuse, insults, impoliteness, and not being deemed capable of understanding information. And one of the things related to the violence and abuse and some of those attitudinal issues is that we don't have good assessment tools, and many women with disabilities don't necessarily understand the features of abuse that impact them. So, for example, women who have intimate partners or are living with someone, they may not have bruises on them, because if they use mobility devices, it's easy enough to put women in a bathroom and take away their mobility devices so they can't get out, or people are blind or unable to see, it's easy enough to remove their food. So I think there's some attitudinal pieces that we still assume that women with disabilities have everything, all the health care they need. So I think that's probably the biggest one. And then the other piece is still finding healthcare providers who share their identity and can really, one, appreciate what they're going through and provide information that's really helpful for women to live and thrive in their communities.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Marks. Our next question is for Dr. Marks, Dr. Harris, and Claire. What are long-term risks of underscreening for menopause symptoms in populations of dually eligible women with disability? Dr. Marks, will you please start us off?
Similar to women without disability, disabled women can experience an increased risk of some health conditions postmenopausal, including heart disease, osteoporosis or weak bone, potential fractures, urinary tract infections, weight gain, changes in sexual function. Disabled women need to also receive education and support and access to healthy diets and lifestyle options, along with regular cancer screenings such as cervical and breast screening. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mark. Claire, I'll turn it over for your response next.
Thanks, Nikki. People with disability are at higher risk of osteoporosis and falls. The risk of osteoporosis can be attributed to people with disabilities are less likely to build and maintain bone mass through muscle strength and weight-bearing activities like their able-bodied counterparts. In addition, some medications that are necessary for some women with disabilities may contribute to bone loss. As we've learned, women can begin to lose bone density in the first few years following menopause. Underscreening for menopause symptoms in women with disabilities can result in a lack of timely bone density screening. Menopause symptoms also mimic other illnesses, and providers shouldn't be so quick to make assumptions that health changes like an increased A1C are disability related. As we know, the incidence of certain conditions increase after menopause, coronary artery disease, diabetes, breast cancer, colon cancer. So understanding a woman's symptoms and their menopause status can really help guide providers in providing preventative screenings promptly.
Thank you, Claire. And Dr. Harris, would you mind sharing your thoughts?
In addition to what's already been said, when menopause symptoms aren't screened for, women are going to suffer from treatable symptoms for perhaps many years when effective evidence-based solutions exist. You know, unfortunately, menopause symptoms can last, up to 2 decades in some cases. These symptoms can be personally difficult and even overwhelming for individuals with disabilities, and can even affect caregivers, such as when an individual may have changes in behavior or increased agitation for women with intellectual disabilities.
Great, thanks so much. And our final question is for Dr. Marks, Dr. Harris, and Claire. What steps should be taken to improve disability competent care education in the healthcare professions education system? Dr. Harris, will you please start us off?
Thanks. There are many important topics to address in the healthcare profession continuing education system. When balancing these many topics, of course, there's important to remember that disability is common. 1 in 10 adults under the age of 65 and 1 in 3 adults 65 and older. And so common issues should be addressed regularly in our educational curriculums, including disability health. Another effective solution is identifying disability competent care champions in your healthcare system to lead educational initiatives. The passion and dedication of these individuals can improve professional education and care across the healthcare system.
Thank you, Dr. Harris. Dr. Marks, would you mind sharing your insights next?
Sure. So healthcare professional education programs need to embrace the intersectionality of disability across all diversity, equity, and inclusion and accessibility initiatives, DEIA. Also need to identify and report disabilities to recruit, retain, and promote the unique talents and skills that disabled students and healthcare professionals bring to both the classroom and clinical settings to impact equitable care for people with disabilities, and understand the rich history of disability rights activists and scholars can also improve knowledge of disability civil rights laws to promote the provision of culturally and linguistically competent care, development of culturally competent disease management programs that include people, women with disabilities, and then have strategies to increase diversity and minority healthcare workforce pipeline to improve disability cultural competence, disability cultural humility, and then ultimately health outcomes for people across all communities.
Thank you, Dr. Mark. And Claire, I will turn it over to you next for your response.
Thanks, Nikki. It's a great question. Healthcare professional education does a great job of teaching disabling conditions, but not clinical considerations or modifications for people with disabilities. And as we have learned today, people with disabilities are a marginalized group, but often overlooked in their DEI efforts. People with disabilities intersect all races, sexual orientations, religions, and identified genders. Medical and nursing schools should teach both sensitivity and awareness, including patients with disabilities in their simulation labs. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is presented by the Lewin Group and is supported through the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. MMCO is dedicated to helping beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid have access to seamless, high-quality healthcare that includes the full range of covered services in both programs. To support providers in their efforts to deliver more integrated, coordinated care, MMCO is developing technical assistance and actionable tools based on successful innovations and care models. To learn more about current efforts and resources, please visit our website, www.resourcesforintegratedcare.com. You can also find us on Twitter. Our handle is @integrate_care. Or follow Resources for Integrated Care on LinkedIn to stay up to date with our recent products and technical assistance.